96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
The state of our union is strong because our people are strong.
President Trump last night during his first State of the Union address, a visibly divided Congress was as clear a contrast as blue and red. But tonight we're talking about black people specifically, the economics and the politics of the speech through the eyes of African Americans. My guests are Liz Copeland, president and founder of the Urban Conservative Project, A. Scott Bolden, political analyst, and Dr. Robert Brown, author of Economic Stress, Harsh Truths, and Keys to Empowerment. What did you think about the president's first State of the Union address? Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Certainly give us a call if you have a comment or a question, and you can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you all for participating in the program. Let me start with this.
And something I'm very proud of, African-American unemployment stands at the lowest rate ever recorded.
Well, President Trump bragging about the drop in the black unemployment rate, certainly big news, but depending on your perspective, not everyone completely agreeing with his perspective. Dr. Brown, give us some context.
Well, good evening. It's good to be with you. And I'd like to say that it's important, I think, for your listeners to have a fuller understanding of what the unemployment rate is. And very simply, the unemployment rate is the number of unemployed people divided by the number of people in the labor force. So we use the example of, let's say, 15 million people who are unemployed, who are looking for work. And we divide that by the number of people in the labor force. And as an example, let's say there are 150 million people in the labor force. That would give us an unemployment rate of 10%. But there are a couple of caveats to that that I'd like to talk about. And the first one is the labor force is made up of the unemployed as well as the employed. But the unemployed are defined as those people who are looking for work and have done so over the past 4 weeks. But here's the thing. If you happen to be unemployed and you're looking for work for 4.5 or 5 weeks, you are now considered what is called a marginally attached worker. And those unemployed people are not counted as part of the labor force. So that means that you have a whole cohort of individuals who are unemployed, who are looking for work, but because they've been out of work for more than 4 weeks, they're not counted in that unemployment rate. The other thing is you may also have populations that are also not counted. For example, full-time college students are not counted. You also have those who are what are called discouraged workers, who are also not counted. And the discouraged worker is simply a person who has given up looking for work. The third category of people who are not counted are those who are defined as long-term unemployed, those people who have been out of work for at least 6 months or longer. So when we look at the unemployment rate, we can't just look at it at face value. We also have to consider the different categories of people who may or may not be counted as part of the labor force.
Well, let's talk about the black category, Dr. Brown, because that, I think, is the issue that has come into question. During the Obama administration, the highest rate we saw in December of 2009, 16.1%. Now, 6.8% during the Trump administration, but the president refuses to give the prior administration any credit for the drop in the unemployment rate. And still, for African Americans, it's still twice that of whites.
Well, sometimes it's more than twice. Sometimes it's three or four times that of those in white communities, depending on what black communities we're talking about. But the other thing that bears stating is that oftentimes the new administration benefits from the good works of the previous administration, and this is certainly an instance of that. The other thing is we also have to look at the policies of the present administration and what has been done specifically to address the issue of disproportionate levels of unemployment in the black community.
Let me ask Liz your thoughts about these numbers as it relates to what the president said last night and has said during his first year in office.
Well, the facts are the facts. This is the lowest that we've seen since 1972. But overall, for African Americans, it's low. But overall, it's low for everyone, around 4%. What our president tends to do is to take credit for things that he can't or he shouldn't take credit for. And he's very boastful. He's absolutely going to take the credit for this. And while people such as myself who are conservative, they are appreciative of some of the policies that are coming out of this administration, the tax reform to be one of them, we still don't appreciate his behavior, his demeanor. Hearing him say that the unemployment rate for African Americans rings a little flat, especially with the representation of African Americans in his administration and the true policy wonks, true individuals who can be liaisons for our community, I find it to just be acceptable. But one thing I want to call out for everyone that's listening, that if the unemployment rate had doubled or tripled, we would certainly be assaulting him with his inability to do things for the African-American community. But I don't want that to be the standard, that things aren't getting worse.
Mm-hmm. But that's not the dishonesty found in Donald Trump's numbers. I think both of your guests are absolutely correct. But if overall employment is down, then it's moved down consistently. So white unemployment and black unemployment, it certainly has moved down. Now, that being said, Donald Trump wants to take credit because he isolates and targets that black unemployment is the lowest it's been in so many years. Well, that's really not true, because if you measure the gap between white employment and black employment, it's still the same. And don't you want to close that gap as opposed to taking the overall credit for it being down? Barack Obama never had an economy. It was the Bush economy. He fixed the Bush economy, which was the worst since 1930s, and he spent 8 years fixing it. And so he was adding hundreds of thousands of jobs his last probably 4 or 3 years. Statistics will show that. And so it came down and was coming down by jobs being added for all people. And so when you argue or you isolate and say black unemployment, I'm going to take credit for that because it's at 6-8% or 7%, it's misleading and dishonest because of what I said, that overall employment is down, but you haven't closed the gap between black folks and white folks working. And that's the real credit behind it. And you're taking away credit from Barack Obama and the work he did, including the jobs in Detroit and bringing back the auto industry that he took credit for. That was certainly a Barack Obama initiative, and it had to be undertaken in order to get us to where we are today.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about black economics, black politics, and the State of the Union address from last night. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Jackson, calling from Gaithersburg. Thanks for calling, Jackson. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. What's on my mind is that Donald Trump is trying to get credit for everything, and he doesn't even understand the fact that – I don't think he understands the fact that the unemployment rate is basically purely a trend. I mean, you cannot necessarily count every single person who's working or not working. So you use an equation that hopefully can show you which way we're going, up or down. It's not an exact science for purposely how many people are unemployed. And under Barack Obama, he had gotten it to go down. It has been dropping ever since. And this president just came in, and it will continue on dropping. But I have a feeling it's going to go up because of his tax program. That tax program is going to smack us in the back of the head. And the rich will continue on getting rich because 81%, if not more, of that tax program goes to the rich that already has a lot of money. And these companies, granted, they didn't need to have a decrease, but 14%, these companies sitting on a lot of money, and that's going to go up too. So we're going to turn around. You're going to find, I hope not, but black unemployment and everyone else going up.
Okay, Jackson, thank you so much. What about that, Lisa? Right now, we are still waiting for the tax cut increase that's supposed to happen this coming February. But is it possible that we still have some 11 months to go before the real meat of this tax cut takes place, where a lot of people, not just in this area, but all over the country, you know, particularly in large cities like D.C., Los Angeles, Miami, New York, and other places, will be hit hard when they realize that they can no longer deduct some of the things that they've been deducting for years.
Yes, they will. And the reality is that this Tax Reform Act, it certainly provides a bigger benefit to corporations and the double taxing that they were receiving. It was to incentivize companies to come back home to America or to incentivize them to stay here. A lot of people are going to see an additional $50 to $80 on average, $1,000 per middle income family. But those that are in oftentimes very blue, democratically led and controlled states, they're not going to be able to see the benefit because they're not going to be able to take the exemptions that they would have previously. But at the end of the day, there's this thought process that if we're able to encourage investment and encourage companies to return the dollars that they save from not paying taxes to the individual workers, that you'll see the economy boom. The Recovery Act has spent about $800 billion and created a lot of jobs. That those jobs went away towards the end of the funding. And now the thought is that conservatives are saying that we're going to fund companies and they're going to stay here. We're not going to let government try to fix the gap or fix the holes that we have in our economy. And it's starting to work. There's been a significant response from companies that are saying we're going to give money and incentives to our employees. We're going to open up factories. We're going to stay here. And that's how you decrease unemployment rate. And that's how you encourage investment in our our country.
202-3. Hold on for a minute, Dr. Brown. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about black economics, black politics, and the State of the Union address. What do you think? How do you see the speech through the prism of the African-American community? We have, of course, A. Scott Bolden, who's a political analyst, Liz Copeland, president and founder of the Urban Conservative Project, as well as Dr. Robert Brown, author of Economic Stress, Harsh Truths and Keys to Empowerment. Dr. Brown, I've got about 30 seconds before my next break. Go ahead and make your point.
Sure. Well, very quickly, in the black community, we have to look at the proliferation of low-wage jobs, and that is affecting people in the black community who have very few credentials, who may have less than a high school diploma, as well as those who may have advanced degrees. And so what is happening more of the time, unfortunately, is you have more and more people in the black community who are trying to cobble together full-time money based off of two, three, or sometimes four jobs. And so it is particularly difficult for people in that situation to really make a go of it. The other thing is, so many people in the black community are still reeling from the economically devastating effect of the Great Recession, which began 10 years ago this past December. So we have to include that in the conversation as well when we talk about policy formation to address these types of issues.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about black economics, black politics, and the State of the Union address. Stay with us. If you are on the phone, you will be able to hear the program. Please do not hang up. We're going to take your calls next. That includes Lisa. Hey, Lisa, calling from Gaithersburg. We're going to talk to you. Also, Renee, calling from Northern Virginia, and Clarence, calling from Northeast D.C. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a few seconds.
All business confidence is at an all-time high. The stock market has smashed one record after another, gaining $8 trillion and more in value in just this short period of time.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about black economics, black politics, and the State of the Union address. My guests are Liz Copeland, president and founder of the Urban Conservative Project, A. Scott Bolden, political analyst, and Dr. Robert Brown, author of Economic Stress, Harsh Truths, and Keys to Empowerment. What did you think about President Trump's first State of the Union address? Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lisa, calling from Gaithersburg. How are you, Lisa? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Good to talk to you.
I find it interesting, although not surprising, that the topic of conversation in African-American circles is the president's attempt to take credit for the economy, or all the credit for the economy. I think we're all forgetting that there's a Congress, and whether it be President Obama or President Trump, no president can all alone by himself affect the economy. But I think what we I would like to see us focus on are the things that President Trump mentioned in the speech that, if he's serious about, could possibly help the African American community. The prison reentry was one help for those who are reentering society after leaving prison. Technical training, actually reread the speech today, as I always do, because there is distracting when you're watching it, and they're going up and down. And there were a few things in there that, if he's serious, could help the African American community.
Okay.
I'd like to get your guest opinion of that.
Okay. Scott, I'll let you start with that one. Thanks, Lisa.
Yeah, but don't be fooled by the rhetoric, because the reality is it's one thing to be able to make a decent speech, but he's not talking to the African-American community, much like during the campaign. When he reaches out in these teleprompter speeches and he talks about unity and he talks about African-Americans, he's really not talking to African-Americans. He's talking to those independents, those moderates, those who are turned off by Donald Trump's personality and his offensive tweets and his racist tweets. And he's trying to get the moderates to say to him or to vote or to believe that he's not that bad. And so when he talks about African-American employment, he doesn't have one targeted program for the African-American community on job training or employment or entrepreneurship. What he is trying to do is expand his electoral base versus his core base. And that's what those messages are all about. Look at the examples and the stories that he gave. What he did was, every story he had, there was a person of color in the audience that said, I benefited from the tax cuts, or I benefited from this immigration plan, or I was a victim of violence by immigrants, if you have you. Don't be fooled by the rhetoric or the images, if you will. You can have a dog and train a dog to give a speech for 50 minutes, but that person doesn't stop being the dog he is. You got to watch what he says, what he signs, and more so, how he acts and what he walks with. And we know Donald Trump. That's why it's hard to believe or to get excited about a speech, because I'm more interested in the actions of the GOP and Donald Trump. And it's been detrimental to the American public.
Lisa?
Liz?
Liz, I'm sorry.
Lisa's on the air.
Thank you. Lisa's on the air. Liz, thank you. Go ahead, Liz.
I think it was a good speech. I think there's some valid points there that he can read from a teleprompter, a really meaningful, powerful speech, and then go off script, and you see and hear the real Donald Trump. That can be very immature, can be a bully, and you know, you just
attack
cringe.
Our institutions.
And both Republicans,
attack Russia,
right? Both Republicans and Democrats alike can agree that, you know, we would prefer that if he could just stop talking, that would be better. But the reality is, he is our president. So long as you're an American citizen, he is our president. And the speech attempted to hit on the points and notes that are important to us. Our infrastructure is important. The fact that Americans are dreamers too is important. The fact that he has talked about being willing, more than willing, to step back from some of his campaign rhetoric and some of the vile statements he made about undocumented immigrants in this country. And he's now willing to come to the table
now,
and have that conversation.
Now, hold on.
And he mentioned that.
It's false.
Liz,
that
is not true.
That's because, a fact.
I tell you what.
Because last night we did hear when he was talking about MS-13, he virtually.
Which is also a fact.
Yes, but he did not at all mention the dreamers that were serving in this country, working in this country, paying taxes in this country.
Fighting for this country.
Fighting, yes.
Sure.
You know, and
sure. My point is this, that when he talks about Americans are dreamers too, that we're important as well, that we have an opportunity to come to the table and have this American dream. The individual who lost, the family members who lost their daughter by an MS-13 gang member, that is a fact. Now,
it's an anecdotal fact, though.
No.
The
it's
majority
not,
of the people
it's anecdotal to the point
country
that
aren't committing those crimes.
Okay, it's
less than 1%, 2%. And to to have the audacity to say that MS-13 represents black people and brown people trying to come here for the American dream, just like Donald Trump's ancestors did, is downright racist.
No one's saying that. No one in this room is saying that, and Donald Trump didn't say that last night.
He
now,
said it
if
before,
he's using
he
that as a dog whistle, like
absolutely,
a Willie Horton commercial,
exactly,
I would agree with you on that. But the
is.
Fact remains that no American citizen deserves to lose their life for someone who is not supposed to be here.
You can't paint them with a broad brush, though. That those things happen, and we feel for their families. But that doesn't mean everybody from Mexico or from Muslim countries are here to do harm to us.
They're not
it's just
the same
not
as
fact.
Dreamers. Let's not conflate the two.
Well,
people who are involved in gang
back.
Members, people who are involved in gang, and they're gang affiliated, they're involved mm-hmm. in a gang, they are not the same as Dreamers.
I think
and what we're now doing, we are putting them together
to
in the same
out.
Category.
Okay,
everybody
but hold on. But he did. But
go.
He said
he wants
last
to put
night.
Dreamers out too.
Yeah.
Don't get it confused. They brought him a bipartisan bill, and he called them S countries, and he rejected that bill after he said he would sign it.
Absolutely did. That's true. That's true.
And
the most recent iteration of that is to have 2 million Americans, 2 million illegal undocumented immigrants here to get authorized to stay, and I think 12 years and they can get citizenship.
To build a wall and to limit those
your party, Chuck Schumer, offered that. Now, anyone who has their weight and fiscal conservatism would say that that's not right.
He was trying to save this country and not shut down the government.
However you want to frame the narrative is fine, but the reality is that Democrats said that. The Democrats said that.
It doesn't matter.
Sure, it doesn't
dealing.
Matter to fit your narrative, but the reality is Chuck Schumer offered that.
You know what the most audacious thing is about immigration?
I've got to let Lisa go. Lisa, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. The other thing, he did equate the MS-13 members who took the lives of the people who were in the audience last night. He did equate them with Dreamers.
Exactly.
He did say that. And so let us be clear. I want to go back to, before I go to Clarence or Renee, I do want to go back to one economic issue, and I want Dr. Brown to talk about this. Dr. Brown, explain the Trump bump, as it has been called, on the stock market. Why is that happening?
Well, I think that we have to look at the cohort of folks that this president is appealing to. And while during the campaign he was very focused on the so-called common man and common woman, we have seen, based not only on his rhetoric but his policies, that he is specifically targeting the 1%. And so as a result of that, we have seen the stock market respond. But it's important to note that there are approximately 327 million people in this country, many of whom continue to suffer significantly, especially in communities of color. And we also have to talk about people who are in poor communities. The question that many people are asking is, when is this president going to honor the things that he has talked about? And I think that for those who might be looking for some sort of silver lining in this, I think that it's going to be a pretty tough road to hoe.
But let me ask you this, Dr. Brown, because when you're talking about black folks, and I want to be really, really clear, is that not all black folks, as you know, are working class and poor. We got a lot of middle class black folks with 401ks, 403bs, IRAs, Roth IRAs, and all of that. Isn't this Trump bump, whether you like the president or not, good for those retirement accounts?
Well, it may be good for some, but we have to look at some of the baseline realities. The first being that the wealth gap between blacks and whites is staggering. And so you're talking about perhaps $17,000 or $20,000 in black bank accounts and white bank accounts. We're talking about six-figure amounts. And so there has been this growing disparity in wealth in the black community. Absolutely, there are some blacks who are doing quite well, who are one percenters even. But for the vast majority of black people in far too many communities, they are struggling. The point that I was making earlier is that struggle has now cast a wider net across a larger cross-section of people in the black community. So it isn't just people who may have low educational skills levels, but it is people who were doing quite well maybe 5 or 7 years ago who now find themselves completely bankrupt or not in a position to pass on any wealth to their children. And so these are the types of issues, economically speaking, that many people in the black community are very concerned about and are waiting for this administration to address.
Let me go to the phones, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Renee calling from Northern Virginia. Thanks for hanging on, Renee. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I was just thinking, like, when I was looking at the TV last night, I was like, wow, his speech really took me over because I was like, I saw him in a whole different light. But then I had to think about it. He didn't write that speech. Trump did not write that speech. So then it's like, what am I really listening to and what do I really believe, right? But I look at when they talk about the medical and stuff, I've heard so many people who said that they were glad that they had the insurance.
You mean you're talking about the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare?
With the Affordable Act.
Okay, the Affordable Care Act. Go right ahead.
Yeah. And so then when Trump became president, a lot of the insurances and stuff started changing. So the premium and everything went like skyrocket. And a lot of people end up losing their insurance because of the instability of what was going on, because nobody trusted what the government was going to do. Mm-hmm. So now you got, even if they did help with the insurance, and I'm very concerned with it because I am in the medical field,
yeah,
that one of the things that Obama did help with is that pre-existing
conditions. And I've got to stop you there because I need to take another call. But I think you did you make an interesting point that pre-existing conditions was something that it appeared that everyone liked. And to her point, just today, and you may have heard it in the newscast, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser signed a Women's Health Care Act to kind of curb the stunting of Obamacare in the district as it relates to breast cancer screenings, as it relates to birth control and the ability to get birth controls at pharmacies. Those are, you know, those are women's issues and Liz, a huge part of the electorate.
Yeah, absolutely. The reality is, though, that the rising cost of premiums is absolutely done as a result of the individual mandate being struck down by the Supreme Court. And healthier people are no longer in the pool of customers that the insurance companies were guaranteed so that they can level out the actual cost for individuals. And in many states, the health exchange, the insurance companies that were once participating, you had five or six opportunities, options. The market shrunk to one or two options. It's without a doubt that pre-existing conditions, removing that to make sure the individuals who couldn't afford it could get a subsidy, those who the expansion of Medicaid, that helped African Americans. And it was a failure for the Republicans to try to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. They couldn't do it politically. And then their constituents who hated Obamacare loved Kentucky Care. They didn't know the difference.
Right.
So, I mean, that's something. I think it's a settled issue now. Americans want access to affordable health care, and African Americans, more than any other population, benefit from the Affordable Care Act. And it's something that many, many staunch conservatives don't want to touch. They want to keep it exactly how it
is. It's 2018 coming up, but they continue to attack with the remnants of Obamacare. Millions have been thrown off, and it's still a very difficult piece because they've destabilized the market by cutting off when you can register, the advertising dollars, and really cutting the Medicaid entitlements. This is still going to be a challenge for poor communities and really many of us in America.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about black economics, black politics, and the State of the Union address. When we come back, we're going to talk to Clarence in Northeast. Lines are still open. Give us a call. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a
I really like him.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about black economics, black politics, and the State of the Union address. Clarence calling from Northeast D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good evening,
hey.
Panel. Good evening, Harold. How are you, sir?
I'm just fine.
Happy New Year's to you.
You too. What's going on?
Well, I mean, I'd like to address the issue about black economics.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I heard your panelists talk about Trump this, Trump said this, he didn't talk about that. You know, to be honest, Trump is going to be who Trump is. And Trump, to be, you know, politically correct, to put him politically correct, he still really thinks that he has the apprentice show going on. So a lot of people get shocked when he says certain things out of his mouth that don't make any sense. But, you know, we are all creatures of habit. That man is really focusing upon the rich. Let's be real blunt and transparent about that. His focus is rich people. Let's make that very clear. African-American people, he can really care less about. What I like to talk about also is that we spend almost $1.5 trillion a year, according to the Nielsen report last year that was done on African-American spending. We got a lot of spending power. So when we talk about unemployment and we talk about the issues with the government, we can fix our own problems. One of the questions I like to find out, when are we going to sit at the table, the round table, with black each other, just like we did in the 1930s with the Black Wall Street down in Rosewood, when we did for ourselves? We don't have to wait on the government. We're spending enough money in this country as it is.
Okay.
When you spend $1.2 trillion, that means we got a lot of spending power.
Okay.
Now we need to shift that wealth, and we need to fix our own problems.
Clarence, let me have Scott try to tackle that. And thank you so much for your phone call. Real quick, Scott, 1930s, 2018, what's the difference?
Well, we got a lot more money than we did in 1930s, comparatively speaking. The reality is that we got to change the culture of consumerism within the black community and our communities of color. That caller's absolutely right. If we could change that from being consumers to savers, whether it's your 401k, whether it's investment, whether it's being entrepreneurs, whatever it takes, we've got to have more of our people in the community, hopefully not acting like Republicans, but acting somewhat like Republicans and putting some money away, investing in real estate. But we need training and entrepreneurship in those investments. Lots of investment clubs around him from really smart black people. We certainly know that to be the answer. And yet and still, if you are the working rich or the working poor, we'd spend a great deal of money. But we need to be trained by experts to change that culture of spending.
Okay. Clarence, go right ahead, Dr. Brown, please.
I think one of the things prior to what Attorney Bolden was saying is that we've got to fall in love with one another again. There is so much antipathy in the black community, unfortunately, which prevents the opportunities for collaboration, having a spirit of cooperation. And without going back too far, one of the best and worst things that happened to the black community was desegregation. Mm-hmm. And so as a result of that, it has really fractured our thinking about who we are, what we have the capacity to do. But I also believe that we are at a point, given what has happened over the last 365 days, to really reassess the power that we have always had collectively and individually, and really pool that resource and energy in ways that can begin to set new types of examples for present and future generations. But as the caller said, the $1.7 trillion of economic capital has been largely misused over the last four decades. And as Dr. King said, we have to begin to redistribute the economic pain. And so why are we constantly in a situation where we feel like we have to go buy, when we could be saving and investing and reincorporating those resources and allocating them back into our communities so
exactly.
we begin to
yeah.
be our own
exactly.
source of social
That's
enterprise.
Right. Recirculate those dollars.
Well, there's also
in our community.
There's also an issue that almost 50% of African-American student loan borrowers default on that debt. Yeah. And so, you know, the opportunities for vocational and technical skills, you know, the push towards higher education creates this vicious cycle of feeling that you need to have a degree in order to make it in today's economy.
And with debt.
And then you walk out of school with more debt than you originally intended to borrow. I think that's also contributing to our inability to save, our inability to invest in our own communities.
Clarence, thank you so much for participating in the conversation. I've got two things I want to get to. We only have a few minutes left. First, and I'll start with Liz, I need you to talk about this.
Tonight, I'm calling on Congress to produce a bill that generates at least $1.5 trillion for the new infrastructure investment that our country so desperately needs.
We've been hearing about infrastructure spending for three presidential terms now, Obama, and now Trump. And President Obama couldn't get one through, and now the shoe is on the other foot. And if you don't know, when it comes to infrastructure, roads, and you know, other kinds and other kinds of, you know, buildings and schools and bridges and all of that, there's a lot of money in that, especially when it trickles down to state spending, grass cutting, all of those contracts. That could help turn the country around. But again, he's asking for the same thing President Obama was asking for.
Well, as President Obama said, elections have consequences. And right now, my party is in control of both chambers of Congress and has the White House until November. November of this year. We don't know what's going to happen with the midterms. The infrastructure spending, as a conservative, I cringe at that dollar amount. That is a lot of money.
True.
That is a lot of money. I want people to be clear that our national debt is going to be impacted by that spending. And
the tax cut. That's coming next.
Yeah, and we would have a little bit more time here as far as that tax cut is concerned. If some Democrats would get on it, it's going to be a sunset for people who are receiving those tax benefits. I will agree with you on that. But when it comes to the funding that's going to be in the states and local governments, that's going to be a lot of opportunities for contractors. It's important to be able to see how many minority business enterprises are going to have access to those contracts, how many job training and workforce development programs can be funded on a local level for residents to be able to gain the skills they need to participate in that. It's going to really change our country significantly for generations to come, but at a price tag. There is going to be other programs who are going to get hit hard and quickly
the peripheral businesses that could also do well as a result of that?
Well, it's a trust factor. Now, my conservative colleague tells you about the sunny side. Now, let me talk to you about the dark side.
You always got to go
there's
there.
There's a dark side to Donald Trump.
Luke, I am your father.
Sure. If it trickles down and lets the states control it, and those states are controlled by people that don't look like us and don't have our interests, those dollars aren't going to get into the urban community. But more importantly, look at his infrastructure plan, because included in that is public-private partnerships. That means he wants to give that 1.5 or a big chunk of it to large private companies again. He just gave them a tax break. Now he's going to give them more money. On top of that, the dark side is coming on the tax cut. Look how the infrastructure and the tax cut works, because now you've got these tax cuts. You've got a hole in the deficit. You're going to have to close that hole. He thinks that he can do the infrastructure, employ people, and give tax breaks to the wealthy, and that'll create enough economic activity to pay down that deficit. It has never worked under the Reagan tax cuts, under the Bush tax cuts. It's never worked. That's why we got a huge deficit right now. The only way they can go next is to close that deficit, that hole they blew in it by giving tax benefits to the rich, is to cut entitlements. Top 10 states who get the most entitlements in this country are red states. And so, look, the dark side, the dark day is coming. If you give me $4,000 a day, I'm real happy, no doubt about it, politically happy and otherwise. But in 9 months, 2 years, the dark side is coming. Those cuts are temporary. The infrastructure bill's not going to work. And the wealthy are going to keep getting wealthy. And the middle class and the poor are going to stay in place or do worse.
Real quick, last item, and Dr. Brown, I'll start with you.
Why we salute our flag, why we put our hands on our hearts for the Pledge of Allegiance, and why we proudly stand for the national anthem.
We've got a intersection of politics and economics, the NFL, and race. Dr. Brown, where does this protest and the differing points of view go from here, real quick, because I need to hear from everyone?
Well, speaking as an impartial behavioral scientist, I will say that it is very clear that there have been attempts to parse protests about race and racism in this country with allegiance to the flag. And those are two completely separate issues. The administration knows that, but the rhetoric has been just the opposite. So we have to understand why people are standing or kneeling in this case and fighting for the very rights that this country is supposed to provide all people, mm-hmm. and not have that be an opportunity to create confusion and more dissension among the American populace.
Scott, 30 seconds. Where do we go from here with that?
Yeah, real quick. Donald Trump needs to stop talking about it. Don't confuse white privilege with white patriotism, if you will. The very folks who died for that flag, the very folks who died for us to have the freedoms that we have and to put our hand over our heart for the very same reasons. We have the right to kneel. We have the right to put our fist in protest for police brutality and racism in this country. They are all in one bucket. That First Amendment serves those who love the country, and it serves those who oppress the country, and we've earned that right to protest in this very imperfect country that I love so much.
Liz, final word from you.
I can't believe this, but I agree with Scott. As a conservative, your First Amendment rights are very important, and you do absolutely have the right to stand. You have the right to kneel. It doesn't make you less an American. I know that the message might have got lost somewhere with having an understanding why people were taking a kneel, but what do we need to do as a country for people to stand?
Exactly.
And that's something that we should be talking about, and not Donald Trump's statement was to his base only. And people who went to or watched that, they were either with him before he started speaking and were with him afterwards. He didn't change anyone's mind with that statement.
Liz Copeland, A. Scott Bolden, Dr. Robert Brown, thank you all for talking to us tonight. Great conversation. Liz, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it. Great to meet you. And that is The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, January 31st, 2018. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.